Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
Tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Rise and shine, fantasy players. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood, Tuesday, July 24th. Let's cock-a-doodle do it. This is Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I'm your host, Dane Martinez. They call me Speed Spittin' Statistician. And as usual, I am joined by FSWA Hall of Famer, the King, Scott Angle. That's how we help you win your leagues and win your cash. We got a Hall of Famer on deck. How you feeling, Scotty? How you feeling on a Tuesday?
Got to feel good with that kind of intro. And Hall of Fame content on rotoexperts.com and the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Enter the King at checkout for a special discount. Training camps are open. Feeling good, feeling excited.
Absolutely. Training camps are opening across this fair land. You know, during the football season, Scotty, on Tuesdays, I think we're going to be talking a lot about waiver wire pickups, a little bit of takeaways from Monday Night Football, stuff like that. But regardless, we will also be taking your calls. So the number to call is 844-843-6879 if you want to join the fun as we put the fun in functional sports content. We got a good show for you. We're going to chat it up about the news and notes that we've seen across training camp so far. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. We're also going to talk about maybe some older veterans that you could still rely on, or the question is, can you rely on them? Brandon Williams has a great piece that is part of the Roto Experts Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. And remember, you have a chance to win an in-season package. All you got to do is submit to us your best fantasy football team name. And if we think it's part of the top five or one of the tops, we'll put it in the poll. And if the fans agree, you will get a Roto Experts Exclusive Edge in-season fantasy package to help you as you get on into your season. But, Scotty, I want to start with this. We got people reporting left and right. You know, everyone's coming to camp, and it's like big news that Rob Gronkowski will report to camp. Big news that Odell Beckham will report to camp. You know, because these are people who may have been in contract disputes or otherwise. Someone, though, who did not come to camp, Scott, is Browns wide receiver Josh Gordon. Now, here's the thing. They're saying, or he's saying, that this is just part of his normal, like, health and wellness plan, whatever it is, whether he's talking to a therapist or whatever the case may be. But then the NFL comes out and says that they must, quote-unquote, address the situation, even though the team is saying there's no way he failed the test, he did not, like, slip up, that this is, in fact, part of his overall health and treatment plan. Is there anything there here with Josh Gordon not reporting? You know, you just know because of such the history of him being suspended and all this stuff. What's the deal with Josh Gordon? Is there anything here?
Yeah, well, in a few hours yesterday, the story took a lot of turns when he wasn't there. You know, of course, with a guy like Gordon, people are going to suspect the worst. But it sounds like he's trying to be, at least from his perspective and the team's perspective, trying to be on top of some challenges and issues that he's facing. Because you have to remember, people are very critical of a guy like Josh Gordon.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you talk to medical people, et cetera, you know, it's just the way a person is wired. You know, addiction can be very hard. You know, sometimes people just can't control it. And, you know, it sounds to me like he's working hard to get rid of his personal demons here and continue to be able to play the game that he loves. Now, I've been very critical of Gordon in the past because I would say, like, look, you know the rules. The rules are you're not supposed to smoke marijuana, and you broke them. You got to pay for them. But, you know, right now the NFL says that they have to look into it. That doesn't mean that they're disciplining him. Doesn't mean that he failed anything. You know, I hate to use a cliche, but, you know, I don't believe there's a smoking gun here. Now, I could be wrong, but I'm not worried about it as a fantasy player just yet.
Okay, fair enough, and I agree with you. I don't think this is anything to be worried about just yet. I'll even take the Jake Seeley approach. He's always said he doesn't change people in his rankings, even someone like Shady McCoy, until like the NFL actually comes out and actually suspends you or there's actually news from the team. And at this point, you know, there, like you said, there is no fire here, regardless of the buzz. But let's talk about Josh Gordon just for a second, Scott, just from a pure fantasy standpoint. I mean, on the teams that he's been on in Cleveland in the past, you know, he's been, in my opinion, more of like this kind of target monster as like the clear number one pass catching option. The interesting part to me, one of the interesting parts to me this year about the Cleveland Browns, Scott, is they've actually got legit options. I mean, you have Josh Gordon, of course, but you have, you know, Jarvis Landry as well. You have Corey Coleman, who some people believe in. You have a second-year tight end who might take a step in Njoku. And then you have three running backs that people believe are fantasy viable in Hyde, Chubb, and Duke Johnson. All those being considered, I actually think, regardless, Josh Gordon may see a lower share of opportunity and actually maybe not perform up to standard just because there's more mouths to feed in Cleveland than there ever have been. You have him sort of as a back-end wide-out too. Scott, do you agree with my take here that there may be more competition for targets and production for Josh Gordon in Cleveland than ever before?
Now, I'm not going to compare him to this guy, but let's just say, for instance, that, you know, you talk about Antonio Brown. There's a lot, been a lot else on that offense.
Sure.
That, you know, that there's other bounds. But when you have a guy that is the clearly the most talented and best playmaker on your team, you're going to find ways to get him the ball. And other all that other offensive balance only helps him face less defensive pressure. So that's the flip side to look at it. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, he's not going to be a target hog, especially when you have a guy like Jarvis Landry
who's a target hog,
everything in sight, like, you know, just like a vacuum, you know, just catches everything within his radius. There's so much offensive balance that it makes Josh Gordon probably, you know, potentially have more upside because the defense can't focus just on much on Josh Gordon. So
okay.
I don't think we've seen quite what we know to be Josh Gordon's pure upside yet, because he is
really, you really, think there's really, more there for Josh Gordon?
So there could be, because we really haven't seen him over a full year recently play up to his potential. So I think Josh Gordon's a little bit of an unknown, and I don't think we can say that yet, because if he can hit his upside, if he can get control of his demons, we just don't know what the upside is because he's that talented.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I just kind of lean a little bit the other way, especially you talk about Jarvis Landry. Jarvis Landry finished fourth in the NFL in targets last year. 161 targets, one of only four players to average 10-plus targets a game, you know, in the NFL. So I just think it's going to be interesting. And it's like, you know, how many times do you think Tyrod Taylor or Baker Mayfield, for that matter, are going to put it up? You know, I don't see these guys putting it up 35, 40 times a game. But it's interesting to see. You make a great point that Josh Gordon's skill set is not to be denied, and there are other examples of premier wide receivers who get theirs in teams where there are other options. You mentioned Antonio Brown. You think Odell Beckham might get that this year as well.
Look back to the 1990s when Randy Moss was putting up all those numbers with the Vikings. Mm-hmm. They had Chris Carter on the other side. They had a pretty good running game with Robert Smith, and they had Dante Culpepper, which was – he was a dual-threat weapon.
Right.
You know, you look at teams that, you know, just look at the year Randy Moss had with Tom Brady, and you know that there was other pieces on the Patriots offense, you know. So there's some other things to look back. When you look back at explosive offenses in the past, a lot of those guys, you know, they had a kingpin sort of player. Maybe not with the New Orleans Saints. I'm trying to think of the Saints a few years ago, and they really
didn't have like Jimmy Graham, if anything.
Yeah, they really didn't have a kingpin pass catcher, but, you know, Jimmy Graham, like, really rose to the top of the heap, and you can't say that, you know, I'm talking wide receivers, not necessarily tight ends.
No, I hear you. Yeah, so we'll keep our eye on that. I do think it'll be interesting to see the way they use what is now a lot more weapons than they ever had before in Cleveland. Another piece that I saw, Scotty, Leonard Fournette reports to Jaguars camp, but he's down 5 pounds, okay? He reports to Jags camp at 223 pounds, 5 pounds lighter than last year. I sort of like this, Scotty. I like this direction. I actually don't like when running backs are, like, bulking up. We heard a story a couple of weeks ago that Aaron Jones of the Green Bay Packers was bulking up to help with durability, to help with pass protection. I don't think Leonard Fournette needs to worry about that. I like him getting a little bit, a little bit slimmer. Maybe that helps him with elusiveness. And to be quite honest, maybe that helps him with all of his lower body injuries if he's carrying a little bit less on the tires. What do you think? Does this matter to you at all? Leonard Fournette down a few pounds? What do you think? Any impact here?
I don't know, 5 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, hey, but for these finely tuned athletes, like, every pound matters, though. I mean, think about this. Think about, like, weight classes in boxing are only like 5 pounds different. That could be something. Maybe that could be something for his health. Maybe it could be something on his ligaments.
I'm not going to move Leonard Fournette in my rankings based on this.
All right, but does it, do you?
He's already an outstanding running back.
Would you prefer him lose 5 pounds or gain 5 pounds, Scotty?
Probably lose, but I'm not going to. To me, it's not a big piece of fantasy news.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. We'll see if how they spin it. You know, remember, this is the point of the year where everyone is in the best shape.
Look, I could be wrong about this. You know, maybe it's Leonard Fournette and the team feels that 5 pounds makes a big difference. But from a fantasy perspective, it doesn't move the needle in my ranks. You know, that's the bottom line.
I hear you. The only thing I could think of, because, you know, he's not going to change the style of running back that he is. The only thing I can see is that, as you know, Scotty, this is a guy who has had leg, knee, ankle, whatever, lower body injuries all the way back since LSU, right? So maybe he was advised to, you know, be carrying a little bit less on his frame, a little bit of less stress
good
on the
point.
Joints.
Yeah.
It could be something like that. You know, he has been dealing with leg injuries, all the way back since
maybe it makes him a little less of an injury risk.
You never know,
and,
right?
You know, that's the face. And the other part of it, you know, maybe he's more sleek. You know, maybe he wants to make defenders miss more.
A little more
elusive. Takes less contact. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it could be something like that. We'll see how it plays out. But, you know, one thing I will say is that it's good that if it was, in fact, his goal to lose some weight, that he did come in 5 pounds lighter. Remember how there have been some times where backs like Eddie Lacy had incentives, right? And they had to lose 5 pounds every time. So 5 pounds does matter for some people, Scotty. Here's what I want to go to next, Scotty.
More like ton and pounds, you know.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, Eddie Lacy.
It's amazing how he's already out of the league.
That's what I was going to say. Remember, we've talked about, like, DeMarco Murray, Shane Vereen. I mentioned the names like Orleans Darkwa, Alf Morris. Like, Eddie Lacy's still on the street also. You know, and
probably
it's crazy.
He's probably going to stay there.
I would guess so. You know what I mean? But I think his only shot is if someone loses via injury, specifically that part of the committee.
Who's going to want to sign Eddie Lacy even if somebody gets hurt?
I'm saying only if that very specific part of the committee goes down. You know, if your goal line back only goes down and you need to fill just that role, maybe there's a potential.
But he wasn't a goal line runner last year.
I understand that, but I'm just saying that's the only way I could see a team wanting to utilize.
If you want to pick up a goal line back, you have to get somebody who gets in the end zone. And he didn't.
Yeah, I guess I'd rather Alfred Morris, right? I'd rather Alfred Morris in that role.
I'd rather take my shots with Alfred Morris.
Right.
He certainly looked more spry than Eddie Lacy did last year.
Listen, and as I've always, I joked with you when he was on the Seattle Seahawks, I always thought with Eddie Lacy, instead of managing his weight, they should have let him eat all the Chinese food he wanted and put on an extra 30 pounds, and he could have been a great pulling guard for that offensive line who needed some help up there in Seattle. But let's keep it, we don't need to talk much about Eddie Lacy. But speaking of Seattle, and I know you're a big fan there, Scotty, there were two pieces of news that I heard. One is, listen, about this Earl Thomas thing. I think that is going to be a storyline until there's a resolution one way or another, right? He's either going to come hat in hand and play out the contract, they're going to trade him, or they're going to extend him. And it seems like the asking price continues to be way too high in order to actually move him. As time goes on, I think he's going to, you know, I think every day that passes, Scott, the greater chance that he just comes on back and bites the bullet and plays out his contract, right, Scott?
Yeah, you know, I've been saying that, and it was an interesting report yesterday from the NFL Network about how, you know, Thomas is trying to push this thing to get dealt and get a resolution when he wants it, but it's not like the Seahawks won't extend them. I think, you know, this was a report on NFL Network that – you know, they see a few other guys as priority. And, you know, at some point during the season or something like that, they will talk to Thomas about this.
Right.
It's just not a priority for them right now. And maybe he feels insulted by that. But, you know, they are making consideration towards keeping him. I guess they don't feel there's a sense of urgency to do that just yet. And so, you know, a lot of people talk about it from the player perspective, but, you know, from the organization perspective, you know, it might be more than just taking a hard line.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, you know, maybe it is they want to take care of him, but they just got to go kind of like in order. I can understand Earl Thomas thinking he has deserved or earned the respect from the organization to be a priority, but it's something we'll definitely have to watch. Scotty, there's one more.
Well, what's the Vegas win totals on the Seahawks? I'm looking at mybookie.ag right now.
If you go on over to mybookie.ag, it was 8. Last time I checked. Are you bringing it up? I could bring it up right now. But as I'm bringing it up,
yeah,
Scotty.
I'm looking at it right now. I'm new to mybookie.ag.
Okay.
It's Seahawks RSW. I guess I don't know how to read
that. RSW is regular season wins, Scotty.
Right. And in the right corner it says 0.9.
No, so that's not a 0. That's over 9 and under 9, Scotty. Okay,
nine is the season win total. If Earl Thomas doesn't play, I'm definitely going the under.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, Scotty,
or if he's dealt.
Yeah,
definitely going the under.
And here's the interesting part about that one. You know, most win totals are at the half. You know what I mean? Like 7.5 wins, blah blah blah. The fact that this is 9, I actually think hurts the over bet. Because honestly, if you bet the over, they got to get to 10 for you to be a winner. You know, I would have liked it to see it. If I saw it at 8.5, that's a little bit different, you know, because then the 9 gives you the win. For it at 9, for the Seahawks will have to go 10-6 for that to be a winner, for the over to be a winner. I think that's tough. I personally see them right around 500, right around 8-8. So this is a line I would not be touching. I do have another Seahawks question for you, though, Scotty. I saw beat reporter saying that Brandon Marshall was not necessarily a lock to make the 53-man roster. We've talked about this wide receiver room. You know there's Doug Baldwin, and I know that you've talked about guys like Tyler Lockett maybe taking a step, not reminding people not to forget about the Michigan product, Amari Darbo. Do you think Brandon Marshall makes this roster?
Yeah, I said it a few weeks ago that I said I didn't think Marshall was a lock to make this roster. The Seahawks were the only team that was interested in him. And, you know, this could be a thing like when the Seahawks had Terrell Owens in his final at the end
right.
of his career.
They had Jerry Rice at the end, too, didn't they?
And yeah, but Rice played for them.
Okay.
Terrell Owens got cut in the preseason.
Didn't they also have TJ Houshmandzadeh at the end also?
Yeah, but he played for them.
Oh, okay.
I'm not making those comparisons, okay?
It.
I'm making the comparison of when they had Terrell Owens at the end of his career and he didn't make it through the preseason and he got cut. This Brandon Marshall thing could be, and I never said anything about Tyler Lockett maybe taking a step forward. That wasn't me. I like Darbo as a sleeper with Lockett. It's just a thing of he has to stay healthy. And, you know, this could be a team where if Dez Bryant is going to settle somewhere, you know, it kind of makes a fit because they would like to have that red zone presence. But, you know, again, you look at mybookie.ag, you look at the over-under of 9, I think the Seahawks top out at 10. And they probably bottom out at 7. So, you know, they're not going to make it easy. They're going to put it at 9. But when they have, if they have Earl Thomas, they have a better chance of making the over. But they do have, and I don't look at based on last year, they do have a tough schedule. So if you're going to go either the over or the under, you might want to go the under.
Yeah, this is the one that I'm going to stay away from. You know, I think there's other opportunities that are better bets for me. I'm staying away from the Seahawks because, as you mentioned, Scotty, I think they nailed it pretty good. I agree with you. I would take their range and slide it maybe one game down or something, but we're on a similar page here. And because of that, I would stay away from the Seahawks line personally. But we will see.
Yeah, like the Chargers are at 9. I'm definitely going the over there.
Yeah, I like the Los Angeles Chargers myself. As you know, I believe the Chargers will be part of the AFC Championship game later on in the winter. Scotty,
how are the Falcons?
You're all into these over-unders now.
How many,
Scotty, go ahead.
How are the Falcons only 9.5? I'll take the over on that. That's an interesting one. Yeah.
Hey, Scotty, how about this? Here's what we do. Let me cover a couple more pieces of news and notes. And then in the second segment today, let's do two things, okay? We'll talk about these older veterans that you can rely on, right? That Brandon Williams article. And to be honest, Scotty, I'm excited that you're all about this mybookie.ag, that you're all about these over-under totals. I'm going to give you three that I've been giving out to my kind of listeners, fans, and clientels that I think are strong locks. We'll see if you agree, and we could pick out some other bets on these over-under over on mybookie.ag. Let's do that after the break, okay, Scott? Because I do have one or two more pieces of news that came out from the beginning of camps opening and people reporting. And one of them that I find very interesting is New England, who I do believe, Scott, has an over-under of 11.5 this season, the highest in the NFL in New England. Malcolm Mitchell had knee surgery like last week, Scotty, or whatever, recently. And it's looking like there's a threat that he might not play at all this season. Now, Malcolm Mitchell is a guy who's been one of these kind of like nondescript Patriots wide receivers who Tom Brady all of a sudden finds off the scrap heap and polishes up and calls it gold and makes it work for that offense. But my point, I have 2 points on this one, Scotty. One, all these nicks and cuts the Patriots are taking as an offense and as a team, losing their left tackle, losing Deion Lewis, losing Edelman for 4 games, losing their defensive coordinator, all the stuff around Alex Guerrero, I kind of feel like it's the fall of Rome. That's one general speaking thing. Like, will they be great this year? Of course. But we'll see how much longer it goes. And we talked about Tom Brady also having whatever it is. But the other thing,
I got to interrupt you before you go forward, though.
Go ahead, Scotty.
I'm sorry. Sorry about that, but you know what though? I have to say it. I'm sorry. I got to call you out. You sound like a Jet fan when you say stuff like that.
How you figure?
You know, but because when fans you know compare teams, especially they hate, what they do is they talk down certain aspects of the other team. Brady's still there. Belichick's still there. I ain't looking for the fall of Rome just because they lost Deion Lewis and Malcolm Mitchell and one coach. If anybody's going to recover,
their left tackle is a problem.
It's the Patriot. That's what I'm saying. You sound like a fan of a rival team.
Right,
like,
but I was
you're pointing out the negatives. You're giving me 3 middle to low round negatives, and you're talking about the fall of Rome. Belichick's still there. Brady's still there. They're still the Patriots.
Absolutely. And if I was going to finish, that is what I would say. I do think this year they're still the Patriots. I do think the sands of time are going down, though. We talked about it yesterday, and you agreed. Yesterday when I mentioned it, you said it was a very astute point that Tom Brady would only be there for 2 or 3 more years, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm talking about. I'm saying not this year, okay? But now let's just go straight for the fantasy aspect of it. We do have Edelman out for the 4 games, right? Now, Malcolm Mitchell is going to potentially miss some time. I personally, and I know our guy Jake Seely in the second hour was also a little bit intrigued by a guy like Jordan Matthews, Scotty, as someone who's, you know, always been on kind of other teams up in Buffalo, didn't really have that, you know, maybe has a potential in the slot, maybe in place of Julian Edelman in the first 4 weeks. And now, to be honest, I see Jordan Matthews and Chris Hogan as the only viable 2 wide receivers, at least in the first month of the season, right? When Edelman's gone, Mitchell's gone. And so, I'm a little bit upset because I was high on Jordan Matthews coming into this draft season period. But now I worry that other people are also going to be on people like Hogan and Matthews and their value is going to be going up. What do you think losing Mitchell and Edelman does for Hogan and Matthews, specifically Matthews?
Again, these are the Patriots. They lose a few people. They plug in a few new people. You know, nobody does it like they do. And you know, in a game like fantasy football, it's like, does the sleeper really exist anymore? It's, you know, everybody knows, you know, these wide sweeping narratives on certain players. So you're not going to be able to hide players like that. You know, people know who Hogan is. Even the average fantasy player does. And with Matthews, you're talking about a guy who caught 16 touchdowns in each of his first two seasons, including a season where he caught 85 balls, and then he caught 73 the following year, and he went to Buffalo where there was no quarterback situation at all. He got hurt, et cetera. So this is a great rebound opportunity for him. He's got wide receiver 3 fantasy potential in this new situation. I think we've already seen what Chris Hogan can do when he's healthy.
Yeah, Hogan, remember, before his injury, at some point last year, he was a top 10 wide receiver in fantasy. He was doing it in the middle of the season. Jordan Matthews, as you said, his first two seasons in Philly, 8 touchdowns apiece. His rookie year, 67 catches, 872. In his second year, just shy of 1,000 yards with 85 catches. Definitely performing there. Then, as you mentioned, after going to Buffalo, not so much. But he's someone that I had kind of pegged. I think, Scott, the way I was is I had him pegged more as like a diamond in the rough. Jordan Matthews, that is, not Hogan. But now, as the kind of other news breaks out, I'm worried that more people are going to be on him, and I'm not going to be able to get him later in drafts as I was hoping to do.
He can't take that angle that, you know, I'm hoping to hide some player and he's going to slip to me. You know, you just have to go with the trends and what people are talking about and be well prepared and let the draft come to you. You're not going to be able to hide certain players. It's not going to happen. Fantasy football is way too popular and there's way too much information out there. You know, what you have to do is if you want to hide somebody, it's got to be a super duper, you know, very deep sleeper. And, you know, I can give you one from the Saints, you know, later in the show.
All right. Ooh, that's what we call a tease. The King, Scott Engel. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to get a super-duper sleeper from Scott Engel. We'll look at some season win totals, and we'll talk about older veterans you can still potentially trust in fantasy football. We are off and running. Roto Experts in the Morning, the King, Scott Engel, and the spitting statistician, Dane Martinez. Come on right back. It's Roto Experts in the Morning.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. This is the King, Scott Engel. Who are you jamming out to, Scotty? Educate me. Who we got here?
This little classic Kiss, God of Thunder. Yes.
That's what I'm talking about.
This is Gene Simmons' signature song, The God of Thunder. And here's a fact for you. On Reverend Run's solo album years ago, he actually sampled this. It was pretty cool.
Really?
Yeah.
I am intrigued. Good stuff there, Scotty.
Love
good
the crunch there, of the
Scotty.
Guitar.
I like how he continues to educate me as we move along here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Remember, if you want to join the fun, the number to call is 844-843-6879. Remember, if you want to get everything you need to win your leagues and win that cash, try to find out what's good with this Roto Experts exclusive Edge fantasy football package. You'll get everything you need. You'll get great articles. You'll get the King's rankings. You'll get the All-In Kid Jake Seeley's rankings. You'll get, you know, customizable projections and tiers, things of that nature. All you got to do is enter promo code THEKING at checkout, and you will get a special discount. Scotty, you were teasing the audience before we went to break, this idea of a deep sleeper, because if Jordan Matthews is not an example of someone you think I can sneak past the more savvy fantasy football drafter, you were talking about New Orleans. Who are we talking about on New Orleans? Is it a guy? It's not Cam Meredith. It's not Ted Ginn. It's not their tight end. Who are we talking about in New Orleans, Scotty, that you have an eye on?
I got an eye on rookie Tre'Quan Smith, the third Ooh. Round pick. You know, this is a big target. You know, really positions himself well, catches the ball in traffic. And, you know, look, when you got Ted Ginn Jr. there, who is really pure of a deep threat, and you don't know what you're going to get with Cameron Meredith, Tre'Quan Smith was considered a really good pick by scouts in the third round. This is a kid that maybe could step in immediately because this depth chart is really wide open.
Yeah.
It's, you know, even if Cameron Meredith does something here and you have the running backs catches balls out of the backfield,
right.
It's really, when they go to three wide receiver sets, there's a real opportunity here. It's like there's not a lot on the depth chart to vault here, you know, for a talented kid like Tre'Quan Smith.
So I want to ask you something, Scotty, because when you talked about him being like this kind of big target, the Saints have, for the last couple of years, Scott, the Saints have been expecting something out of Brandon Coleman, correct? And he was supposed to also be like a kind of big target. I think they were originally looking for him to be the replacement for a guy like Marquise Colston, if you remember that name, from years back as well with the Saints, who might have been the answer. Remember when we were talking about the Saints of a few years ago, who was their number one receiver? I think the answer was Marquise Colston back in the day. But they were looking for Brandon Coleman to be that guy, but he's never really delivered. You think your guy Smith can overtake Coleman?
Definitely. You know, okay. There was a report about 5 days ago from the Advocate that they don't even know if Coleman's going to make the team.
Interesting. So he is on the roster bubble. Hey, Scotty, as I look on over at mybookie.ag, the New Orleans Saints, their over-under is 9.5. This is a team who went to the playoffs. Remember, lost on that crazy play at the end to Minnesota where Stephon, can you digs it, made the play to win the game. But listen, that corner, who was it, like Williams? He had a great rookie season.
Marcus Williams, yes.
He had a great rookie season outside of that one play. Remember, Marshawn Lattimore as a rookie, Alvin Kamara as a rookie. I think they had a rookie offensive lineman as well. Great haul from the draft last year. Over under for them, Scotty, is 9.5. Do you think the Saints get back to double digit wins this year?
I'm gonna get off the phone early. I'm gonna hop on New Jersey.
You're gonna run to Monmouth Park.
I am going to put the over on the New Orleans Saints. Oh my lord. You know that's a team that could win the NFC.
They can win the NFC. You know they have all the pieces in place. They have the quarterback they need. They have the explosiveness. We've talked about Michael Thomas as a first-round wide receiver. Alvin Kamara, I mean, or as a solid wideout one. Alvin Kamara as a solid running back one. We've talked about their improving defense over time. We've talked about how this team evolves to run the ball a little bit more to help that defense. And we know that they still have Drew Brees. I literally believe, Scott, 50% of all the 5,000-yard passing seasons in NFL history belong to Drew Brees. So we know they can get it done. We know they have a distinct home field advantage in that dome as well. So you may want to go on over to mybookie.ag and throw a couple of shekels on the New Orleans Saints. Scotty, there's two over-unders that I feel really strong about that I want to that I've been giving out to my listeners that I want to bounce off of you, okay? And the first one, Scotty, we stay in that division, okay? We stay in that division, the NFC South, which, quite frankly, Scotty, I think is one of the better divisions in all of football, okay? Three of those teams are led by a quarterback who has won the NFL MVP award. Of course, I'm talking about Drew Brees, I'm talking about Matt Ryan, and I'm talking about Cam Newton, right? And then you got the fourth team in that division, okay? Then you got that team that is not led by an MVP quarterback, that is in fact led by a quarterback that will miss the first three games of the season. I personally, Scott, I don't know if you agree, I believe that the Bucs are easily the last place team in the NFC South. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, this is the best division in football, and they're just their quarterbacking situation isn't as good. The Falcons have a really good defense.
That's right.
The Panthers are good in the front seven. They're more, you could torch them more in the secondary. You know, they had a very bad pass defense last year, but they'd be better against the run. The Saints might have the best defense in the division, and all three have excellent quarterbacks.
Right. So go on over now and scroll down, Scotty, to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers win-loss total.
Let's see. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
All the way on the bottom, Tampa.
All the way on the bottom. Yes, Tampa Bay. Scroll to the bottom. I'm going with the under.
That's a lock under to me.
Lock under, you know, because I could see them losing four games right there in the division alone.
Yeah. That's a lock under to me because I believe they are a last place team in that division. And with the over under at 7.5, if I bet the under, I only lose that bet, Scotty, if they go 8-8 or better. I do not believe the last place team in the NFC South is going to go 8-8 or better. So I'm going to ride that New Jersey Transit bus with you, Scotty. And I'm going to lay the under on the Tampa
Bay Bucs. I'm taking
the
train. They'll get there faster.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah. And here's another one that I think is really interesting, Scott. And I think that this is because of some artificial – this has been artificially boosted up. I think people for two reasons. One, I think people all of a sudden love the name and the enthusiasm because they know the personality. Raiders head coach John Gruden, right? And they like him and they like, you know, kind of that personality. And they like him, you know, with the spider 2Y banana and all that stuff. And also there has been historic stuff about teams like – the public teams getting inflated. And also this team that's moving to Las Vegas is taking on a lot of extra money. And I've heard a lot of people, Gabe Morency and others, talk about kind of the home field advantage and how as betting gets legalized from state to state, one thing you could always do is say like go to the home state of a team and then fade them, you know, because they may be getting some artificial buzz in that market, in that shop. Scott, if you look, the Oakland Raiders season win total is 9.
Yeah, that's kind of a push. Because they do have a lot of talent, you know, especially on offense, you know. But they have a coach coming in there that hasn't coached in years,
yep.
You know, sat in the broadcast booth, you know. And plus, you know, I think everything's going to take time to gel there. They have a few new pieces there. You know, the Raiders and the Cowboys are two has-been franchises that haven't been, you know, real hallmarks of this league since the mid-90s and are consistently overrated. So yeah. I can see where you're coming from. You know, the Raiders, I think more of like, I think they top out at like 8 wins.
That's what I'm saying. So if you think they top out at a total that is 1 less than their season win total, this is not like what we just said with the Seahawks or other teams. If you think their ceiling is still an under for this bet, Scotty, then you got to, you know, when you're riding the train out there, you got to think about betting the Raiders as well under.
Yeah, and then you look at Dallas too. It's like the over-under is 8. And I might be tempted to take the under there because they don't have any wide receivers. They have a very strong running game,
right?
But they have a shaky quarterback, I think, with you know, with not much of a receiving crew, and the defense can be strong in the front 7, but I believe the secondary can be burned, and I don't think it's good enough of a unit, you know, to maybe carry this team to a playoff berth. I could see the Cowboys winning 7 games, so but it's not. These are not easy with the Raiders and the Cowboys because I'm going 1 under and I can get easily burned with that. Whereas if I go the over on the Saints, I'm feeling much more confident.
That's fair. I think the Raiders under is pretty strong to me because, again, remember, Scotty, once again, it's on that whole number. So for me to lose, the Raiders would have to go 10-6, and I just don't see that happening. I don't necessarily believe the Raiders are a playoff team.
What if they win 9?
Then it's a push.
What if they push? Yeah.
Okay, then I don't lose. I get my money back, so I'm okay with that. You know what I mean? And I just think in that division, you and I seem to both think that the Chargers are ahead of them in that division. And, I mean, like, listen, yes, the Chiefs are transitioning to a new quarterback, so I kind of want to stay away from them. And, you know, Denver's going to kind of be there as well. I think they're a similar division that will beat each other up a little bit. I don't see the Raiders getting to 10 wins, which would push me to be a loss in that division. You know, so that would be another one that I like. One other one that I want to talk to you about real quick. You know, we talk about the AFC East. You mentioned the Patriots, right? You mentioned how good the Patriots are, okay? And I want to ask you, though, Scotty, about the other teams in that division who we think will not be able to have a chance against the Patriots. The Bills over-under is 6, and this is still with that cloud hanging over LeSean McCoy. There's a universe that McCoy misses time, and if they do, how are the Bills going to win many games? I think under 6 is interesting for Buffalo. Think about the Dolphins in that division. Also, you see Miami at 7. Do they have enough to go 8-8 again? And you also mentioned the Jets. The Jets who you think may trend in a positive direction, or this is what you were saying yesterday. I don't want to sound like a homer. The Jets are at 6.5. So all of those teams are right around 6, 6.5. If you can identify and you're confident who the second place team is in the AFC East, there might be some value there as an over, Scotty.
Yeah, when you look at Buffalo, I'm going to take the under because the defense is very good, but it's going to spend too much time on the field.
On the field.
Because the offense is going to be bad. The Dolphins are one of the best unders in all of football, I think.
Yeah, I like that.
Ryan Tannehill is just not a good quarterback.
Yep.
You know, they lost Jarvis Landry, et cetera.
Yeah.
This is not going to be a good division at all. You know, it's top heavy with the Patriots. I think I can take the over on the Jets with confidence. I think they could be a 500 team. But I think from a betting perspective, you also have to remember during the regular season that you can't assume anything.
Sure.
New England can walk into Buffalo in a divisional game and lose. Because, you know, that's just how it is.
Absolutely.
In divisional games. That's just
the Dolphins
how
play the
NFL
Patriots
is.
Pretty well for some reason.
Yeah.
You know?
The Dolphins and the Jets, you know, that's always a war.
That's right.
Always.
That's right.
Always a war, no matter who is on the team. It's always like a high-scoring sort of war. You know, I'm always going to bet the over on a Jets-Dolphins game. I don't care who is playing quarterback. And from fantasy perspective, though, you look at this division, too, you know, it right now, you know, go on the homepage of rotoexperts.com and there's rankings from Mike Cardano Jr. of all the NFL offenses from 1 to 32 based on their fantasy relevancy. And, you know, enter the king at checkout for a special discount. And he ranks the Jets last, which I disagree with. But all those AFC East teams are towards the bottom. I think because he's a Jet fan, he's playing doom and gloom there. I don't think the Jets offense there reverse there. So you're different. You're like one of the few positive Jet fans that I've ever met in my life. And you know the other sometimes I think it creeps into the analysis there.
So here's the thing. Let me just say, you know, because we talk about like me with the Yankees and you with the Seahawks and stuff like that. I'm going to tell you right now, my outlook, I believe the Jets are going to win 6 games this year. Okay. I don't think the Jets are on some kind of are going to contend. What I do believe, my cause for optimism, though, and I tried to mention this a little bit yesterday, is I do think that they are more well positioned than the other dregs of the AFC East. I think the arrow is just pointing in the right direction. And I think that eventually, whenever it happens, Scott, whenever the fall of Rome does in fact happen in New England, and we talked about this yesterday, the avocados and the Uggs and the sleep therapy and Alex Guerrero can only last so long. But I do think that, you know, kind of in this next wave, in the AFC, when Tom Brady leaves, when Big Ben leaves, when Phillip Rivers leaves, which are all going to happen in the next, I don't know, 3 years, let's say, I think the Jets will be one of the teams ready to kind of start an ascent. That's all I'm saying. But this year, I personally actually would even stay away from the Jets over-under. I think they're a 6-10 team. I'm not thinking anything's going to happen. I'm just excited for a cause for optimism in the longer term. The one other thing I want to tell you,
I'm going to be gutsy. I'm going to be gutsy and go the over. Call it a hunch. And
so you are actually more optimistic than the Jets on I am for this season.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, you go with your gut. My gut tells me that Sam Darnold's going to have a really good rookie year. And that team's going to be 500. They're just going to miss the playoffs.
I would love it if they were, in fact, not the same.
Well, what I'm saying is,
you're
a more positive Jet fan because every Jet fan I run into is just like doom and gloom, you know.
Okay.
And
you're more positive than me on the Jets.
You're not. What I'm saying is, you're not doom and gloom. I've noticed that. I think you're
enough.
More realistic.
I appreciate that. Listen, I've been in the stadium many times. I've seen all this stuff. I lived through Joe Walton, you know, and stuff like that as their head coach. I understand.
Rich Kotite.
Exactly. I just hope they're not the same darn old Jets. I will say this.
By the way, you break another stereotype, too.
What's that? I'm Yankees Jets.
Yeah, there are a lot of people there. It's not Mets Jets. You know, the Jets haven't played in Queens since 1983. So,
exactly.
You know, that. There are things that just don't exist anymore, and people can't let go of them, like saying New York football Giants. There hasn't
there
been a baseball giant since the 50s, thinking that people are Jet Met fans. Old narratives die hard.
They do. I mean, I'm a Puerto Rican from the Bronx, so I love me my Yankees. But at the same time, my grandparents, rest in peace to both of them, they had season tickets to the Jets ever since they played in Shea Stadium that got passed down in my family, ultimately, until unfortunately the PSLs came, and we just couldn't re-up with that. The one thing I was going to tell you, though, real quick, Scotty, you mentioned when the Jets and the Dolphins get together, it's a high-scoring affair. The first football game I ever went to was in 1985 or 86. Scotty, and it was the Jets versus the Dolphins. The Jets beat the Dolphins 51-45. Dan Marino and Kenny O'Brien combined for over 900 yards passing, and Wesley Walker, who was actually blind in one eye but a great wide receiver for the Jets in the 80s, caught a game-tying touchdown and a game-winning touchdown. And elementary school Dane Martinez also drank alcohol for the first time that day when his grandfather gave him a flask and said, "Hey, kid, this will warm you up." So I always remember that. And the Jets and the Dolphins, they were 51-45. You know, it was a thriller that game, something that even you remember. I believe it is still one of the top five, like, combined passing yards of all time in a game. Kenny O'Brien and Dan Marino.
First NFL game was not that exciting. 1989, I got a press pass on my internship with United Press International, and I saw the Seahawks and the Giants at Giant Stadium, and the Seahawks didn't even score a touchdown.
Was that a little Dave Craig, Steve Largent, Kurt Warner
action? No, that was Kurt Warner's final year with the Seahawks and Steve Largent's final season altogether. But Kelly Stoffer was a quarterback. Thankfully, they didn't have the Boz yet. The Boz was in the 90s.
He was still in Oklahoma or even before that at that point in time. All right, Scotty, here's another thing. Okay, you mentioned, so listen, go on over there to mybookie.ag. Check out some of these over-under totals. I'm telling you right now, I'll give you three. If you go under on the Bucks, the Dolphins, and the Raiders, I think you're taking home money this season. And you could thank the spitting statistician after when you're at the ticket window. We talked, though, about these Roto Experts exclusive edge package, and one of the things you're going to get there is Brandon Williams' article about kind of veterans, you know, that are still have something to offer in fantasy football. So I want to bounce a couple of these guys off you, Scotty, and see if you agree with Brandon Williams that there's still maybe some gas left in the tank, and or that they're in a role that could set them up for success, if that makes sense, okay? Because a lot of people think about these new shiny toys. We talk about the buzz on all these rookies and stuff like that. But there's a couple people that I think, you know, at least Brandon Williams says can still be effective, and I want to bounce them off of you. The first guy, Scotty, that I want to talk about is 31-year-old LeGarrette Blount up there in Detroit. Okay, now listen, they drafted Kerryon Johnson. They have Theo Riddick, but as you know, Scotty, the Detroit Lions have not had a 100-yard rusher in a very, very long time, and they haven't really had a goal line back. They have struggled to punch it in from inside the five, and that's what LeGarrette Blount does. I think this is a great fit personally, and as we've talked about, the touchdowns score you points. I think LeGarrette Blount can still get 8 touchdowns, even if he's only around 500 yards because of Kerryon Johnson, the rookie. Do you think LGBT is still valuable for teams?
Okay.
LGBT rights, LeGarrette Blount, baby.
Yes. The Blount, you're talking about a guy who scored 23 touchdowns in his past 3 seasons. Bob Quinn has come out, the general manager, and said he wants this team to be more physical, and that's what his offseason goal was. They were the worst team in the red zone in the NFL last year. So Kerryon Johnson is a guy who runs high, and I think they're worried about how consistently he can carry the ball. This can be a true committee here, and if you're looking for LeGarrette Blount for just the touchdowns and you're looking at a standard league, I think he's certainly viable as like the fourth running back on your fantasy roster.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I believe that he can be an RB4, someone who in bye weeks you put in and hope for the touchdown. And I think you could do a lot worse than, you know, trying to bank on getting those 6 points out of LeGarrette Blount. Another running back who's getting up there in age, and this is even older. We got Frank Gore at age 35 down there in Miami. And Scott, here's my thing about Gore. I think he is, you know, unexciting. You know, I he's not dynamic, but I believe he's going to be just stable, just consistent enough, and just productive enough. Not necessarily for himself, but I think he really compromises the value of Kenyon Drake, who a lot of people were excited about coming into this offseason in Miami. To be quite frank, he's the reason they traded Jay Ajayi away. Do you think Frank Gore still has value? I mean, he's been so consistent for years and years, even in Indianapolis. He's 35 years old. We talk about 30-year-old running backs. This guy is in age 35 and still doing it. Do you think there's any gas left in the tank for Frank Gore?
Frank Gore is the guy that shatters those myths and the example of, like, you can't go by axioms in fantasy football, 30 or running back, etc. But last year, and I'm going to use Gore's nickname here, the inconvenient truth for is that he only played half the schedule and averaged 3.7 yards per carry and scored three times. So I think while he's still – it's still so admirable that he's playing, I think, you know, you're talking about a clear number two running back in Miami.
Yeah, but what is so what's the deal with Drake, though? Does he you know, because it's a timeshare or a committee
even
with
Bellage? I don't
see
it as a timeshare.
No?
I don't see it as a timeshare. I see Drake as the leading running back, you know, the leading
ball like
carrier. And, you know, Gore could be the handcuff and maybe Bellage is third string because I think I don't know if Bellage is ready to make an immediate impact.
Okay, fair enough. But still, as a timeshare between Drake and Gore, that's what I'm talking about. You know,
I don't think it's a timeshare.
No?
I don't think it's a timeshare. I think Kenyon Drake's going to be the clear lead running back there.
Really?
And Gore's going to have a few carries per game, and Kalen Bellage is probably going to, you know, sit on the sidelines and, you know, listen and watch Frank Gore.
Okay, fair enough. So those are some running backs. I want to ask you about two tight ends that are in many people's top, I don't know, seven or eight, but I think are kind of pushing the boundaries of their age. It's Greg Olsen in Carolina and Delanie Walker in Tennessee. I mean, Olsen's 33, Walker's 34. Olsen coming off some injuries. And here's the other thing. They both are on teams that just kind of got – in the last year or two, an influx of new pass catchers. You know what I mean? Like Carolina, Greg Olsen is competing now with DJ Moore as well, and the emergence of Christian McCaffrey, which, you know, he wasn't there for that last year. And then in Tennessee, listen, they get Deion Lewis out of the backfield. Everybody believes a big step is coming from second-year wide receiver Corey Davis in Tennessee. If these things are true in Carolina and Tennessee, what does that mean for the target share of Olsen and Walker, who are getting into their mid-30s?
Well, there's one school of thought is that, you know, Antonio Gates played till he was at least 38, and he might not
Fair.
Be done.
It's a different and kind of offense than we see in Tennessee.
It doesn't matter, though. That's not the point. Okay. The point is that, you know, that he was a top tight end who played deep into his career. Yeah, so like Frank Gore, you know, he set the example that maybe these guys could play for a few more years than we expect. That said, you do make a good point. The last time we saw Greg Olsen healthy for a full season, he was caught 80 balls for 1,073 yards. You know, I think you got to scale that back somewhat here because they want to get other guys involved. Delanie Walker is different to me. You know, okay. you look at Delanie Walker last year, and there was no major fall off. Until proven otherwise, he still caught 74 balls, 807 yards. But, you know, the touchdowns, they certainly weren't there. They were down last year. But everything else, like the receptions were up. Until proven otherwise, Delanie Walker is still, like, a top pass target in that passing game. We have to see Corey Davis do it. You know, it's, you know, we don't know that Corey Davis is going to send. He's got to prove it. I think there's a good chance we do. And both the numbers of Olsen and Walker ultimately are going to get scaled back a little bit. But I'd be a little bit more concerned about Olsen.
All right, fair enough. Okay, so if you want to get more takes and more older veterans that maybe fit this bill, guys like maybe Pierre Garçon, guys like Larry Fitzgerald on the wide receivers, Garçon, well, you know, be sure to check out Brandon Williams' article and be sure to go on and get the Roto Experts Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package and enter the promo code THEKING at checkout. Scotty, it's been a good day, a lot of good stuff. Shady McCoy reporting to camp tomorrow in Buffalo. We'll talk about that. Maybe some other opportunities out there and other articles from the Roto Edge exclusive package. Have a great day, Scotty, all right? We'll talk to you tomorrow in the morning.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-84-FNTSY. 843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Welcome back to Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Dane Martinez, Featured Statistician. I am your host, and we bring in right now my guy, the number one accuracy ranker in the business, the all-in kid, Jake Seeley. Jake, it is a Tuesday. How you feeling bright and early in the morning, brother man?
I'm feeling fine.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad to hear you're doing well early in the morning as we get ready on a Tuesday. Jake, camps are opening across the league. People are reporting. We're seeing all these guys who may have had some level of contract dispute coming into the fold. Gronk is going to be there. Odell is going to be there. It's all good. But I think it was a little bit interesting to see that Josh Gordon was not going to be there. They talked to him about he's going to miss the start of camp as part of his quote-unquote overall health and treatment plan. Now, listen. Addiction is serious and real, and therapy is, you know, important. Do you buy this? Is there anything there, Jake? You know, do we let this man have his own health and treatment plan like any human being should be? Or is there any concern with something like this right out of the gate? Is there any there as it relates to Josh Gordon, Jake?
I honestly have no idea. I mean, we can hope for the best for him, but I have no idea what's going on. I don't think anybody does. I think the most concerning part is the fact that they said the NFL said they would address it. I mean, that makes it sound more ominous than
nefarious, yeah.
I mean, no, that's not necessarily, but it just makes it sound more serious than just, hey, he's getting the proper, like the planned treatment that he was already planning to do heading before, like we even got to this point. So the fact that it's this close to training camp, it's right as they're entering and he's not going to be there. And there's certainly concerning factors. And if you're drafting today, I mean, I really don't know what to tell you. I'm not taking him inside the top five rounds. That's for sure. I mean, I want probably at least the seventh or eighth round before I consider taking him, where I have a full roster as in starters before I start considering taking somebody who might not play this season.
Interesting. So do me a favor, Jake, and compare that up against the LeSean McCoy of a couple of weeks ago where you said we're not dropping him until there was like a definitive word from the league. Here, we're not necessarily hearing that he's missing games or anything yet, but it seems like you're, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like you are more willing to stay away from Josh Gordon than you were with the news around McCoy a few weeks ago, or do I have that confused? Because it sounds like before the league is coming out and saying anything that you do have a little concern as it relates to Gordon, whereas I thought you were more strong on keeping McCoy where he was until there was more definitive word from the league.
Yeah, well, it's two complete different situations. Okay. LeSean McCoy, the lady was making up stories, as everybody's found out, is the fact that she's not telling the truth. It's completely different than the fact that we have Josh Gordon, who has multiple instances of off-the-field issues. So it's a completely different situation.
Got you. So the track record there with Josh Gordon makes you think that there's more of a chance that there's some smoke and that there's fire there, and it's not just smoke because of the track record, let's say. Another piece, Jake. You know, I'm reminded of last month, you know, when it was June news and we didn't make much of it. But one of the things we did both say that we didn't necessarily like, Jake, was when Aaron Jones, Green Bay running back, was like putting on 5 pounds. You know, we were like, we don't know generally how we feel about that. We heard yesterday that Leonard Fournette actually came to camp 5 pounds lighter. He's down to 223 pounds. He played at 228 last year. So I want to wonder from you if this is any kind of impact. The only ways I could see it was, yeah, he might be trying to get more elusive or whatever. But what I think could, if anything, be an actual piece out of this is that, remember, Fournette has had leg injuries ever since college and before, since at LSU, right? And maybe if he's had all these ligament issues, these knees, these legs, these ankles, maybe having a slightly lighter frame puts less wear and tear on that frame for some more durability. Do you read anything into Fournette coming in 5 pounds lighter?
No, not at all. Not one bit. That's it. That's the end of it. No, I don't.
Okay. Thank you.
It's 5 pounds. Don't care.
All right. Well, I mean, you say 5 pounds, right? It doesn't matter. But I do remember, you know, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, when Eddie Lacy had benchmarks every 5 pounds. Like, 5 pounds was kind of a distinguishing factor, at least for some teams back then. So I understand.
Is he Eddie Lacy?
No, he's not Eddie Lacy, but if okay. he wanted to come in, it still was news that he came in 5 pounds later, and I'm trying to read the tea leaves.
It's not the news to me at all.
Okay, fair enough.
You can put 5 pounds on and back in 1 week.
It is not news to Jake. Let's see if this is news to Jake. Jake, in New England, we hear that Malcolm Mitchell has had a procedure on his knee, and he may miss a significant chunk, if not all, of 2018. Here's where I think it matters for fantasy, Jake. You and I were both already at the Jordan Matthews party. You know, we were dipping nachos in the dip. We were dancing a little bit. We were, you know, we were hanging out. You were singing all the words, the songs from the 90s, stuff like that. We were chilling at this party. And I worry now that with Edelman out the first 4 games, now with Mitchell no longer kind of in this group to consider, it leaves Hogan and Matthews left there. I'm worried more and more people are going to come to the Jordan Matthews party and join us dancing out there. Does this matter to you at all, especially not for the Malcolm Mitchell, but what it does to the attention potentially of a guy like Jordan Matthews or Chris Hogan, who we have been talking about on this show?
No, because Malcolm Mitchell was never an issue. I couldn't care less about Malcolm Mitchell. He wasn't going to be a factor in this situation anyway.
Okay, fair enough. So this doesn't. None of these things seem to matter to you. Jake, is there anything from the first couple of days of camp that we heard that does matter to you? Are there any kind of headlines or news that you do think move the needle that may have fall through the cracks of the spitting statistician? Is there anything that so far does move the needle for you? Or should we move on to our team-by-team preview, which today is the defending AFC champion New England Patriots? Are there any news and notes that matter to you?
Not that I've seen, because I was up to the stupidest, longest, idiotic, I hate people in the draft last night for the Pros versus Joes.
Ooh! Do me a favor, Jake. Send me the link to this Pros versus Joe so we could talk about that a little bit later on in the show. Maybe after we break down the Patriots,
The a-hole owners are? Yeah, that'd be good, too.
I mean, it seems like that's something that you're on today. It seems like you were up a little late doing this. So maybe this is where you get a chance to, you know, talk about it a little bit more and critique it. So do me a favor, send me that link. Maybe after the break, we'll touch on it a little bit to see how you did in that Pros versus Joe's draft. But you are absolutely correct, Jake. I tried to have Malcolm Mitchell be the last piece of news that we talked about because I wanted to stay with fair enough. Wanted to stay with the New England Patriots as part of our team-by-team preview. I fear that I want to get more than one word answers, though, out of you, Jake. So I'm going to ask an open-ended question. Generally speaking, with the Patriots, can you tell me, generally speaking, who of these Patriots are you going to have more shares of? And who of these Patriots in kind of the Pros versus Joes or the Scotty Fishbowl or anybody else do you think after draft season you will not have shares of? Of this year, who are you going to have shares of? Who are you not going to have shares of as it relates to New England, Jake?
So you want me to cover the entire team in one question? That's kind of got you. You're kind of screwing yourself over that way too. If you think
not really, because you don't have to do the whole team. You don't have to answer three people on each side. I just want to start with one, and then I have other places I'll go, Jake. Don't worry about it.
Well, the easy one is Rob Gronkowski. There's no way on earth I'm ever drafting Rob Gronkowski in the first 2 rounds, even in a point and a half for a tight end PPR, which is that's what the Pros versus Joes is. There's just no way. I'm never going to spend that draft capital on a tight end. Not a question, not a thought, not a concern. Never going to happen. The ones that I'm probably going to end up the most of, surprisingly enough, one isn't surprising. The fact is if you look at Chris Hogan, we've already talked about him before. He's on a ton of my teams. The other is why I say surprising is because Tom Brady, people are taking him as like the fifth, sixth quarterback off the board. I don't know if they're concerned that he's finally 40 and change, and he's fallen to like the eighth round, the ninth round. I'm like, you're going to give me Tom Brady in the eighth or ninth round, just like Carson Wentz. I don't know why everybody is just all of a sudden so dismissive of Tom Brady.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, it's relatively speaking, we talk about this, you know, you talk about Carson Wentz, right, how in the eighth and ninth round, you'll pull the trigger on him. You have to balance these things, guys, this idea that, yes, generally speaking, we talk about waiting on quarterback, but if you can still get these kind of top-end guys and you have waited a little while and you have gotten running backs and receivers and they're still sitting there for you, go ahead and snatch them up. Where would you say, you mentioned, Jake, was it the fifth round that you mentioned? Like, at what point are are you still thinking like, okay, if these top-end quarterbacks, the Bradys of the world, you know, whoever else you put in there, whether it's, you know, Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, these kinds of guys, at what point do you balance that? And relatively speaking, are they someone you'll pull the trigger on? Where do you start thinking about that, Jake?
About which part?
About taking the quarterback, like even though you're saying you want to generally wait, like you're saying with Tom Brady, he was still waiting there for you in, I think you said the fifth round, I believe. Where would you consider it?
You weren't listening.
So I'm asking you the open-ended question, Jake. Where would you consider it?
I'm asking you to listen to my answer. How about that?
Ooh. I will do my best, Jake. It's easy when it's one-word answers, but when you start to go and pontificate a little, it becomes a little bit harder. But I will try,
seventh,
Jake.
Eighth round.
So for Tom Brady?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Point. That's why I said surprising.
Okay, fair enough. So in the fifth and sixth round, you are still not pulling the trigger. Is that correct?
Correct. That's still not drafting a quarterback in the fifth or sixth round.
Okay, fair enough. That's what we want to know. We need to give these people, Jake, who are listening, the tools they need to win their leagues and win their cash. All right, I have two other places that I do want to go with the New England Patriots before we look at their season win total, which I also think is fairly interesting. The first, Jake, is with Edelman, but also with other people that are saying generally coming back from suspension, whether it's the 2-game suspension or the 4-game suspension. I want to ask you specifically with Edelman and then broaden it out to a larger question. With Edelman, even though you know you're going to miss the first 4 games, at what point, Jake, for you, does the production you're going to get from him in, I guess, with the Patriots' last 12 games, at a max for you, the last 11 games likely of that season, including saying like fantasy playoff production, like how do you balance that knowing you're going to miss the first 4 games, but then knowing that if you do draft him at some point, it's going to wind up being a value for you, especially late in the season when you need him to make a run to contend and in the fantasy playoffs? How do you deal with players that you know are going to miss chunks of time but are really valuable for you for the balance of the games that they play? So I want to ask you about it as it relates to Edelman, maybe Mark Ingram, and then generally speaking as well. So let's start with just Edelman. How do you balance that, Jake, knowing he's going to miss the first 4 games with knowing the value that he does represent when he is in there?
It really depends on where you are in the draft, but it's the fact that I don't want him to – I'm not taking up a starting roster spot, and that obviously he's not going to be starting for you, but I'm not going to take him as one of my first 3 wide receivers for somebody that's going to miss 4 games, because his factor, too, is the fact that you look at Edelman, he's always getting hurt. So he's not just to come in and guaranteed you're going to get 12 games out of him, actually 11, because you also have the bye. If it was somebody you trusted a little bit more, like, I don't know, Demaryius Thomas, who's never getting hurt ever. He's out there the entire season. I'd be a little bit more comfortable. But, you know, Edelman's already somebody that you're concerned about the injury every single year. You know, yeah, sure, he can be a wide receiver, fringe wide receiver 1 in PPR when he's out there and healthy. So there's that kind of value there, but I'm not going to be willing to take him as my 3rd wide receiver off the board. Some people will. So I actually haven't ended up with Julian Edelman at all.
So not too much of Julian Edelman. One of the things you mentioned, though, Jake, was you added the injury concern onto Edelman. So let me give a different example. Let's say Mark Ingram, right, who maybe does not have the same level of injury concern. Does it change because of the injury concerns? Does it change because of the position he plays? Things of that nature. I mean, Edelman and Ingram were both, if there is no suspension, guys, you know, who you would see a lot earlier in drafts. Do you apply the same logic to Mark Ingram?
A little bit different, because the fact is he's a running back, and that has more value in general, especially in drafts, because where Mark Ingram's going around timeshare running backs, RB3s and 4s. And, you know, if you can make it through the first couple of weeks for Mark Ingram to come back, now you're talking about a top 15, 16 running back that you're getting from there on out. And he hasn't also – he's had a few injuries, but he hasn't missed the time like Edelman has. So I'm willing to look for Mark Ingram more than I am Edelman.
Okay, so you know the suspension return is one factor, but you still have to think about all these other factors as well when you put that on the scale. Hey, Jake, the last kind of place that I wanted to go before we look at the season win total for the New England Patriots over on mybookie.ag is this running back room, Jake. I mean, for years – You know, it has been described as a fool errand to try to predict what running back on a week-to-week basis will be used. Will Bill Belichick like? There were years where you thought about like, oh, will this be kind of a James White kind of game or not? And they have some kind of roles. You know, you got the guys who were out of the backfield. You have the guys who were the kind of goal line backs. I mean, you got James White. You got Rex Burkhead. You have Mike Gillisley. You have the rookie Sony Michel. There's some people who would like to believe that maybe Sony Michel can have more of a share than backs in New England in the past. And I don't know if I believe it. You know, this is something that I personally would want to see before I believe it. Do you anticipate, do you read the tea leaves here in any specific way? Do you think there'll be any Patriots running back that does kind of poke their head up and breaks out of what has been a very frustrating committee over the last few years in New England? And can that guy be Sony Michel? What do you think about this running back room, Jake?
No, it's the same. I don't understand why people, it's like, oh, you know, the Patriots all of a sudden are going to be different than they have been the entire time for Bill Belichick. It's just because they drafted Sonny Michel. Well, they drafted Lawrence Maroney in the first round way back in the day with Bill Belichick, and he didn't even start a single game as a rookie. And so I just don't think that this is going to change anything just because people are saying, well, they drafted Sonny Michel. Yeah, well, they've done this before, and it didn't matter. So it's the same backfield. Sonny Michel's likely, and I would bet money on it, if he plays 16 games, he's going to have the most value of anybody in that backfield. Is it going to be consistent? Absolutely not. Are you going to be able to predict week to week what they're going to do with the touches? Absolutely not. And that's why I'm not going to own Sonny Michel, because somebody out there is buying it. It was going to be different this time, and somebody's taking him as an RB2 in the fourth round, and just keep doing that. And I'm not, no way on earth I'm doing that.
Right, so you're going to let someone else play Russian roulette with the Patriots running backs. It's not going to be you, even though, I mean, let me ask you, though, Sony Michel, just like skill-wise, is he ahead? Is he skill-wise clearly better than Burkhead, clearly better than James White, clearly better than, like, Jeremy Hill, who they brought in as well? Like, I understand the philosophy of MIDI that's there, but on pure skill, do you think he is head and shoulders above the rest?
Yeah, that's not a question. That's not the question that people need to be asking. And the question is, do you trust Belichick to use him consistently? And that the answer is no.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. So remember, you do have to think about that when looking at Sony Michel. The talent may be there. We've seen him do big things in the Rose Bowl and in other games with Georgia in that incredible two-headed monster along with Nick Chubb. But, you know, it's in fantasy football, really, it's not only skill. It's really about the opportunity. And the opportunity is clouded in the Patriots' backfield because of all, not only all the other talent that's there or other bodies that are there, but also because of, as we have seen, the way Bill Belichick decides or decides not to use these backs. Hey, Jake, the season win total for the New England Patriots, as I go on over to mybookie.ag, and remember, guys, you can enter the promo code FNTSY, the promo code FANTASY, and you'll get a 50% deposit bonus, and that's really good. That's the Fantasy Network helping you guys out to win your leagues and win a little bit of extra cash. When we go to the New England Patriots, Jake, they have the highest win total in the NFL, and that is at 11.5. Now, listen, I've seen seasons where the Patriots get to 12-4 in their sleep, but for me, it's just a little bit too much, you know, to take a risk on. It's just way too high for me. It's kind of like having, you know, the Cardinals and the Browns or teams like that at the 5 level. Like, yeah, I could think that they're going to defecate the mattress, but it's a really low number. And I think similar things here with the Patriots at 11.5, but that's a really high number. Are you that confident in the Patriots, for example, them beating up on the AFC East and otherwise, that you would go over 11.5, or would you stay away from this one in general?
I'd go back, and because you can build your own prop, like you said, I go back and I go to over 10.5, because that's where it was to start, and that's where that wasn't even a question in my mind. The last time they haven't won 12 games was in 2009. So if I'm forced to bet this one, I'd actually bet the over, but I'm not going to bet the 11.5.
Okay, so you're going to move it down to 10.5. Jake, let me ask you this. Why move it down instead of, say, like moving it up to 13 and taking the under? You'd be more confident moving it down and having them hop over it?
Yeah. No, I'm not taking the under on the Patriots or anything.
Never. Okay, fair enough, fair enough. It is a fool's errand not only to pick which running back is going to be the stud, but also betting against Tom Brady and Bill Belichick is you're not going to win much money doing that. All right, fair enough. Hey, so you've got 11.5. We've got the over potentially, but a little bit more comfortable if we tease it down a little bit. And that's what you can do over on mybookie.ag, okay? You can enter the promo code FNTSY, and you'll get a 50% deposit bonus. Okay. So if you want to move the line, cool. If you don't want to move the line, cool. As we move on, and Jake, what we'll do is we'll look at this draft that you were talking about, the pros versus Joes, a little bit when we come back. But I do want to get your take real quick. Scotty and I, you got to love the King, Scott Engel. He was over on mybookie.ag, Jake, and he was looking at it, some things. And let's say it was the Patriots, right? He was like, I don't know what this means. Patriots RSW. And then I don't know what it means where it says 0.9, you know, that sort of stuff. And I was like, the RSW, Scott, is regular season wins, and the 0.9 means over 9 or under 9. We were kind of reading those, and we gave some out in the first hour that we were in agreement with, Jake, that we thought were pretty good locks. Can I bounce them off you real quick to see if you agree? Because we've got three. I always want to do an odd number of them, right? So even if you go 2-1, you still wind up making some money. But I got three I want to bounce off you that we, Scotty and I, agree and are pretty lock-ish. Want to see if we can make it a clean sweep on those. Is that cool, Jake?
Yeah.
Cool. So the first one that I look at is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Jake, I believe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are last place in that division. They are the only team in that division that is not led by a quarterback who has won the MVP award. We know he's going to miss Jameis Winston, that is, 3 games. Jake, if you look at their season win total, it is 7.5. I think that's a solid under. I don't see them going 8-8 or better. Do you agree? And Scott also agreed. Do you think the Bucs is a good win, is a nice easy win if you bet the under?
I'd say so.
Okay, good.
I'll agree with that one.
Thank you. So we're 1-for-1. We agree. I like that. The other one, I do believe we definitely agree on because we've checked it before. This was one we both said was a lock. We don't necessarily believe in John Gruden. Maybe the game has passed him by. Jake, the Raiders' win total is 9, which means you only lose that bet if you take the under, which I'm recommending. You only lose that bet if they go 10-6. I think that's a little bit too rich for the Raiders' blood. Do you agree with that one? Under 9 for the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, I'd take that one even before I took the Buccaneers one.
Okay. So we could put them in priority in a little bit. And then, Jake, I feel like you're definitely going to like this one because I know you believe, or at least it was one of your bold takes, that the top 6 picks in the NFL draft next year will have 3 teams from the AFC East in it. So I look at some unders there. Jake, the Miami Dolphins over-under is at 7. I don't think they go 500. You clearly don't because they would be in the top 6 of the draft. So I'm also recommending the under for the Miami Dolphins at 7. How do you feel about that one?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good. So you're on the same page as Scott and I. We agree. How would you rank those? You said you would do the Oakland one first. Would you do the Miami? Would you actually put the money on the Miami? Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Miami, Oakland, Tampa.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna ask you. You know, maybe as we finish our AFC East and our team by team predictions, maybe if we have time on Friday, we can look overall, Jake, at the entire NFL and what some of our best bets are for the over under. Those are definitely 3 I would like. Maybe some other AFC East teams as well. You know, the Bills are still somehow at 6.5, even with the LeSean McCoy cloud still hanging over them on some degree. So maybe that's another one. But those are 3 right there that the All In Kid, the King Scott Engel, and the Spittin' Statistician Stable Genius and Vocal Minority all agree on. So you can go on over to mybookie.ag, enter the promo code FNTSY, and maybe get a little bit of extra cash for the holiday season as these 3 teams, all in our opinion, defecate the mattress. Let me ask you this, Jake. We only got a couple minutes as we head on into break, and then we're going to talk about this pros versus Joes idea. Their schedule. I'm intrigued by week 15 at Pittsburgh. Okay, we've talked about this before, how, you know, I think once you said you thought I was taking it too far, but because there's that clear gap with the Patriots and the rest of the teams in the AFC East, and because we agree that there may be also a clear gap between the Steelers and the rest of the teams in the in the AFC North, that these are two teams, along with your Chargers, right, who may be vying for home field. Talk to me about that Week 15 matchup, Pittsburgh and New England. Do you expect that to be for seeding purposes? Do you expect that to be flexed to Sunday Night Football, things of that nature? Or is it too crazy to start reading the tea leaves that far into the schedule?
That's a bit crazy. I mean, but we expect both of these teams to be at the top of the AFC, so I could see it being one of the factors in the playoffs for sure. I mean, that's just if what we're predicting from today, you know, like I said, I'm not going to get hung up on the schedule, but that's a little bit of a situation. If I believe the Patriots are going to potentially win 12-plus games and the Steelers are around 11 or 12 themselves, then we would expect that game to possibly depend on where the seeding is going to happen.
Yeah, and, you know, the same might have been true last year. If Jesse James gets called that he's in the end zone, I wonder how the AFC playoffs. Let me ask you, Jake. You know, remember the Jesse James play at the very end of that Patriots-Steelers game last year, and then, of course, Big Ben throws the interception afterwards. Do you think that the AFC playoffs shake out any differently if Pittsburgh wins that game, if those games are in Pittsburgh, if Jacksonville has to go to New England in divisional weekend instead of in the AFC championship game? Do you think that there would have been any actual impact in the 2017 AFC playoffs?
Yeah, there might have been. I don't know that you look at those teams. I don't know that you say definitively they would have one way or another, because you look at how they played in those games. All those things matter. So, yeah, I mean, you always want home field, but I'm not going to say that for certain it would have changed things. I think it would have just made things more interesting.
Okay, interesting. You talk about the Big Ben home road splits a lot. You know what I mean? So I do think it's important for Pittsburgh, maybe even more than some other teams. I might put New Orleans in that category potentially as well, where that home field advantage and that seeding may be really important. Whereas Jacksonville, where it's running and defense, that may travel a little more.
I think Roethlisberger's playoff numbers, even on the road, are a little bit different than his regular season. This is why Ben Roethlisberger's annoying, because you never know what the heck. You don't know what his problem is. You can't figure it out. So let's see.
So the splits are not as dramatic in playoff numbers?
Yeah, so that's what I thought. 2016 in New England, he threw for 314 yards and a touchdown. It was only one touchdown. But I mean, but then the week before at Kansas City, it was 224 and zero touchdowns. In 2015, he's at Cincinnati, 229 and one, and then he goes to Denver and throws for 339, but no touchdowns. So it's Ben Roethlisberger. He's annoying.
Is Ben Roethlisberger. He is annoying, but he does also have Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell as weapons. So on any given week, you know, he could pop off. I'm also reminded, to your point, Jake, remember they did go into Kansas City a couple years ago. And I think that game wound up being what, like 18-15 or something like that, where they had a lot of field goals, but they couldn't punch it in to the end zone. That one was on the road. So we shall see. When we talk about these contenders and them playing each other late in the season as it relates to New England and Pittsburgh in the NFC, Philly and the Los Angeles Rams also battle in Week 15. That one could be interesting. I wonder which one they'll flex. We'll get Jake's ideas on that, and we'll also get his look at these pros versus Joes draft when we come back. It's the All-In Kid and the Spitting Statistician when we come back here. Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Roto Experts in the Morning.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Welcome back. It is Roto Experts in the Morning. Jake Seeley and Dane Martinez here as we put the fun in functional sports content. Hey, Jake, this is a little Method Man and Red Man little combo. I like the Method Man and Red Man combo. We talked a little bit about Wu-Tang Clan before, stuff like that. But the idea that Med and Ref always got together, I think they even had an album together as individuals. Remember the movie How High? They made a nice combination, huh, Jake?
Yeah, that's actually, oh, I forget the name of the album, though. I can actually picture the cover of it.
Blackout.
Yeah, I had that. Yeah.
The Blackout album, I believe. But yeah, definitely. I always liked the way they vibe together. Remember, they even had that
with
movie,
How 1-2-1-2 on it.
Yes, yes, absolutely, Jake. And listen, Jake and I, you know, we like to put the fun in functional sports content, but I got to tell you guys, okay, we were doing that trivia contest a little bit before, and, you know, someone won. I believe it was on Gabe Morency's show, Game Time Decisions, but we are still primed and ready to give away two tickets to the 2018 World Series. What you got to do, remember, go on over to dailyroto.com/DKMS. We have been collaborating in the fight against blood cancer. If you listen to this network, you definitely know by now, okay? Hitting 300, 30% gets you to the All-Star game, but that at rate is not going to cut it when patients need to find a blood donor or bone marrow match when they are struggling with this disease. That's how you can help, okay? Our guy, Chris Bavona, the manimal, he, you know, he swabbed his cheeks. He was already a match, okay? And it's really a way that, not in fantasy world, but in real life, you can help someone struggling with this disease. And you can get into a free DFS contest. If you win, you get a chance to win two tickets to a 2018 Fall Classic game. You gotta like that. Jake, another thing we're doing, before we get into this pros versus Joes, you know, draft that you were in that apparently took a long time last night. We were talking also about this team name contest. Do you have any submissions? Do you have any that are coming around in your, you know, I know you're not only on Roto Experts in the Morning. You do a lot of work. You're out there on social media, 40,000 followers. Cannot be wrong. Do you have any other ideas to add to this contest that we're having so far about team names? And also, you know, you mentioned, generally speaking, let's give the listeners some support here. You mentioned that you don't like kind of like middle school bathroom humor as for the puns of these kind of names. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And
all right, so what would move the needle for you, though?
I don't
know.
What's
a creative fun? Oh, okay, it's just when the spirit moves you. But yeah, we're telling people avoid the like, you know, fart and sex jokes. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, I said if you want to get my vote. I mean, you know, I don't know what you and Scott are going to laugh at, but I was just saying if you want my vote, I'm not going to vote for those.
Okay, fair enough. You know, I just want to give the listeners here, you know, some insights. Yeah, some insights into the judging. You know what I mean? I want to know, like, what kind of stuff will move the needle for Jake Seeley. Scott actually said similar things because you know, yesterday there was a submission about Saquon these nuts, and you said, like, you know, I'm not going to do that middle school humor. I'm not riding with that. Scott was also not a huge fan of that one. Instead, we did have Mark Bishop, though. I want to bounce this one off you. Mark Bishop says, make this house my homes. How do you feel about that one?
Yeah, it's okay.
It's okay. You don't think it'll ultimately remain in your top five, but at least it wasn't middle
Probably
school humor,
not.
Right, Jake?
Okay, no, fair enough. I mean, you already got your Mahomes, so it's kind of...
Yeah, that's Mahomes. Yeah, I hear you. All right, so we shall see. I do say this, like, Mahomes definitely is a player's name that lends itself well, you know, along with guys like Diggs and Thielen and, you know, Ertz and other guys that I have that we've always talked about in terms of nicknames on this network. All right, Jake, let's talk about these pros versus Joes. And can you frame this for us? Because for everybody that needs to know, the first thing you need to worry about in a league is to check your settings. You have to know PPR or not. Are there any kind of bonuses for the tight end? Is it a two quarterback league? Is it a flex league? So help us set the context here. I see that it is 12 teams that did a draft here. What is the pros versus Joes? Like, we've talked about Scotty Fishbowl. We've talked about kind of diehards and others. What is the pros versus Joes league and format?
It's a best ball format, and it's six pros, quote unquote, like, you know, whatever you want to call them, but like experts, whatever name you want to give them, that's what they're supposed to be. And six high stakes players that buy into it and go against the pros. So the Joes are supposed to be anybody out there that wants to put up the money and play, which is basically, if you go to FFPC, there's a bunch of high stake leagues, and it's the same as the format of their high stake leagues. Is it's a best ball. It's a point and a half PPR for tight ends and PPR for the rest. Everything else is the same. It's quarterback, two running back, two wide receiver, two flex, tight end, kicker, defense, stupid kickers and best ball, whatever. But, you know, they still have it. And then the pros versus Joes, which they've always done, is if you win the pros versus Joes, you get a free entry into the main event thing the next year. So there is some potential for even the pros to, I actually did it. Tim McCall has done it before. So
Okay.
There you go.
Fair enough. That's interesting. And did you mention PPR? Was there any bonus for tight ends? I was trying to listen carefully, but you were reeling them
off. I said
that.
There
is? No. There is a bonus for tight ends.
I even said half extra point for tight ends.
That's what I was double checking. So is that part of the reason why, Jake, the first thing I'm struck by when I look at this draft is there's not one, not two, but three teams that within their first five picks – double dipped on tight ends. So just literally when you send me the grid, Jake, and I saw like kind of the purple shading, right? I was like, my eye was drawn to that, right? So, and it wasn't just fans. It wasn't just the quote unquote Joes that did that. Howard Bender from Fantasy Alarm, who I know you know well, also went double dipping on tight end. I mean, this team run the jewels, Jake, in his first two picks. Go Rob Gronkowski and Travis Kelce. Eric Danowski grabs Olsen and Ingram, and then Howard Bender of Fantasy Alarm gets Delanie Walker and Kyle Rudolph. Talk to me about the viability, given this format with the bonus for tight ends and the best ball format. Talk to me about the viability of that strategy. It didn't look like you did the same thing, waiting to grab David and Njoku until, I believe, round 8, it looks like, and not getting a second tight end until all the way down to Jake Butt out of Denver. Talk to me about the viability about what these three guys did.
I don't think it's a viable strategy, and I've won this before. Tim McCullough has won it before. As I said, Tim McCullough won it with one tight end, and he didn't have a second tight end for the bye week. We were talking about yesterday in the frenzy. I don't remember if it was Gronkowski the year he got hurt and even missed a few games and he had zero tight end, or if it was the year that he had Antonio Gates as his only tight end, whatever it may be, is he only had one, and he only had one for most of the season. And as I said, I've never drafted a tight end early in this format. And like, I'm just going to say, this is going to sound bragging, but the proof is I'm number two all time in pros versus Joes, all time average finish. And I've never drafted a tight end early. I think people get way too hung up on the extra half point for a PPR.
Okay, fair enough. So that, and that's the thing, Jake. You know, we talk about like knowing your settings, right? And, you know, it is kind of in vogue to give that kind of little bonus to the tight end. Am I correct? I want to check here. It sounds like you're saying even with that kind of tight end bonus, maybe a point and a half or whatever it is, does that, generally speaking, that does not move the needle enough for you to prioritize tight end that to this extent, correct? So like, I just want to zoom out. Generally, we're giving people advice here, teaching them to fish.
That's what I just said, though. Yeah, this is why. Because what's the best case scenario for a tight end? A tight end is not catching 100 plus passes. And even if the ones that do, even if you want to give them 100, let's say Gronkowski or Kelce and the only two, still the fact is, it's not even quite six receptions per week. So it's an extra 3 points at best. It's just not worth it.
Okay. Fair enough. The other thing that you mentioned to me, like, let's talk about your platform here a little bit, Jake. I know that you don't like kickers. Right. I know that you don't like kickers. You don't think they kind of belong at all. I know that's part of your platform. Jake, you mentioned in the best ball league, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in the best ball, like, you just draft and that's it. Right. So like for defense, don't you kind of have to have two on your roster just because of the bye week? For kickers, don't you have to kind of have just two on your roster just because of the bye week? Or is that crazy? Is it better to actually take a zero or something like that? I guess you don't. But here's the thing that I saw. You get multiple kickers. Could it actually be in a best ball format with kickers? Might it actually be smart to go ahead and get a ton of kickers? Because on a week-to-week basis, you might have a big-time variance among the three kickers. And so in a best ball format, one of them on a given week may, in fact, put up enough points for you to actually differentiate yourself. Do kickers or stocking up on kickers become actually important in best ball?
Well, yeah, of course I do. You just said I took three, so you already know the answer to that question. So, yeah, 100%.
Tell me about the philosophy. Tell me more about the philosophy then, Jake.
It's stupid best ball. We're drafting at the end of July, and the problem is, and why you have to take three kickers is because one could lose their job by week one, and then one could lose their job in the middle of the season. This is so asinine to still have kickers in. This is stupid. The only reason I'm doing this is because it's fun, and it is. I just draft and forget it, and I have done so well, obviously, in the history. But to play any best ball, sorry, FFPC, sorry, anybody else who does it, kickers and best ball is the most asinine thing in the world.
Right. But in order to prepare for it, you do go ahead and take a lot of bites at the apple because you need it because it is best ball. The fact that you
because even if you only have two, I mean, even if you took only Justin Tucker and Chris Boswell,
right.
Chris Boswell types haven't lost a job. The only time you could take two and not feel like a little bit concerned is if you took like a Tucker and a Gostkowski, like they're never right. losing their job. But then again, Justin Tucker was kicking like, you know what, just 2 years ago. So it's stupid.
No, I hear you. The one thing I will say, if you're going to draft multiple defenses and multiple kickers, do me a favor and just make sure, guys, that you check the bye weeks of those teams, okay? Right. And make sure that you don't see the same number next to those. Jake, the other piece that I want to ask you about this, I know we've talked a lot, Jake, about zero RB theory, that sort of thing, or like how long you're waiting. I do see it's not necessarily zero RB theory, but you did decide in this league to go wide out, wide out, wide out, getting DeAndre Hopkins, Odell Beckham, and then T.Y. Hilton, right? So then by the time you do in fact get your wide outs, you're going to war with LeSean McCoy, Marshawn Lynch, and Jamal Williams as your top three running backs. Talk to me a little bit about why you decided to go back-to-back-to-back wide outs when we've always, when we have on this air talked about the value of the few and far between workhorse running back. Do you feel you still got a potential one of those in LeSean McCoy in round four? Why'd you go wide out, wide out, wide out, Jake?
Well, it's the same thing I tweeted last night during the draft. Is I just because of what I preach all the time, I also, the biggest thing I always say is the draft, how it falls to you and taking the value on the board. It, just because I wanted to get a running back, if you're going to give me DeAndre Hopkins and Odell Beckham to start the draft, sure, thank you. I was going to take Leonard Fournette, but the Fat Bastards team, which can go jump off a cliff, and I hope you hit every rock on the way down. It's a minute and a half clock.
They're on the turn right in between your both picks, right? So you got to wait for this.
No,
guy. Is that what it?
Yes. On top of the fact that it's a minute and a half clock, takes almost the entire clock on both picks. Every single pick throughout the entire draft. You know what? They can bleep this out, Dane, because I don't do it very often, but he's an asshole. There's nothing else.
Woo!
That's the only way to put it, especially because I put in the chat, I have to wake up early, guys. I'm not trying to be that guy, but let's try and be cognizant of the time. He ignored that. Run the Jewels ignored that and took almost the entire clock every single time. I'm calling out these teams. I don't care. I don't care if they unfollow me and don't want my. It's good.
You got 40,000 others, Jake. You all right.
Yeah. Who wants whatever? Who wants whatever, too? Look, you can see that little star next to a player's name.
Yeah.
You see that? That means it's auto-drafted. So. Yeah, that's auto-drafted. So that's auto-drafted. The only reason you see two against mine at the end is because I set up my queue and hit auto-draft so I could go to my damn bed because these people were taking so long because it was after 12 o'clock in the morning for a freaking 28-round draft with 12 teams. Let's also talk about the fact that this pro, Jason Rock Phelps, timed out multiple times. Like, this is just – you should not need to take a minute and a half.
He's got to start next to his first-round draft pick, it looks like. Jake
and Ezekiel Elliott. And this fact, like in the first round took almost 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You shouldn't.
No, I hear
you. If you need to take a minute and a half for your first round pick, you shouldn't be playing fantasy football. Just
here's what I would say, Jake. I hear you with that guy at the turn. And, you know, obviously you were right there at the 11 pick, seeing him back to back. I can see, Jake, let's say it's a minute and a half, like you said, the 90 seconds. I can see using most of the 90 seconds for the first one, but then just firing two off real quick back to back. Because if I take the 90 seconds, I might be trying to play like, oh, I'm trying to maybe think about both of my picks. And especially in, say, like a keeper format, I might be trying to have some strategy as to which one I draft first and which one I draft second for the rounds, if it matters, depending on the, you know, format of the
league.
You're
talking about on the turn?
Yeah, on the turn. That's what I'm talking about.
But you should have taken three minutes for both picks.
I get you. That's what I'm saying. I might take whatever the allotment is for the first pick, but then I'm thinking about both of them as a kind of comprehensive package. You know what I mean? And then when I'm picking one, I have the second one ready to go rapid fire. You know what I mean? Is that acceptable to Jake Seeley?
Either way, like I said, the biggest thing was the second pick. I mean, it's still
right.
If you took a minute and a half for both, okay, that's 45 seconds. That's not the worst. It just I don't understand. With these, like, Graham, Barfield, I were doing the same things. It's just like the picks were – it takes us 5 seconds. Set up your queue. You see what's coming off the board. You can go down your list and cross off names. You know what's coming. It's not like it's a surprise when you get to your pick. The only thing I can say where sometimes, you know, maybe you take 30 seconds – is if you all of a sudden the three picks in front of you went kind of quick and it was bang, bang, bang out of your queue. I can understand.
Or if a run
that.
Just got started, maybe. If a run just got started, you know, something like that. If you're waiting and all of a sudden three of the last four picks are tight ends and you're like, oh, wait, this changes the landscape of that tier, something like that. You know what I mean, Jake?
But to go back to the original question, I didn't want to do that. I was going to take Leonard Fournette, but Odell Beckham over Christian McCaffrey and the rest of those running backs wasn't even a thought in my mind. I had to do it. And then if you're going to give me T.Y. Hilton at the end of the third round, that's just okay. Thank you, because I knew I was going to get LeSean McCoy on the way back because the guy took Cook and Fournette, so he's going to take wide receivers. Yeah. So T.Y. Hilton was definitively higher than Diggs, Robinson, and the rest there. So I got McCoy. Do I am happy about my running backs? Absolutely not. Not a question. But at least I got Lynch. It's a best ball, and I got Lynch and Doug Martin. So I have the Raiders situation covered.
Do you lean to do that more in a best ball kind of format? Yeah, double definitely. Up on the cost, say like a LeGarrette Blount and Kerryon Johnson.
I was going to try and take Aaron Johnson on top of Jamal Williams.
Aaron Jones. Interesting. So, you know, Jake, we only got like 30 seconds left today, but those are some things. Remind me, I want to ask you about that. A, as it relates to best ball, the idea of, you know, handcuffing, what that means, because, you know, injury kind of is almost a good thing for you in that situation. And you said something else that I find very interesting that could be the case, especially if you're drafting in, say, positions 2 or position 11, that I want to pick back up with you tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll stay also in the AFC East. There's only 2 teams left in our team-by-team previews. We do stay so fresh and so clean, Jake. I'll see you tomorrow. I also got to ask you, though, Jake, tomorrow, because I'm going into the studio talking about my man Danny Otto. I want to see if you're going to find your way onto Popping Off. I saw on social media there was some stuff for that. But have a great day, all right, Jakey? Carton and Friends are up next. We'll be back here tomorrow. Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Have a great day, Jakey.